This is the D Word Podcast, where we talk dementia. Welcome along to another edition of the D-Word podcast. Now, a couple of weeks ago, I presented a very special edition of the D-Word on UK Health Radio. When I presented my first show back in 2019, to be honest, I had no idea I'd still be presenting the show 5 years later and having reached D-Word 250. It's been an amazing journey. I've spoken to and made friends all over the world and learned such a lot. So who better to share such an occasion with than my friends Peter Berry and Deb Bunt.
Well, welcome to D-Word 250, which is a milestone I must admit I never thought we'd reach. But when I came closer to that milestone, I began to think, who can I have as my very special guest on D-Word 250? And it didn't take long, actually, because I thought, I've got to have my favourite double act. The two Ronnies, Morgan & Wise, or whoever you like, Ant and Dec, they all pale into insignificance compared to Peter Berry and Deb Bunt, who are joining me on D-Word 250. Thank you both so much. It is brilliant to have you back on the show.
Well, thank you very much, Peter. It's great to be here. And I never, ever dreamed that I'd be compared to Ant and Dec and the two Ronnies. Fame at last. Here we go. Big time rolls on.
I think we'll have to work out a little bit later which one each of you want to be, but we'll...
Well, it's when he says Laurel and Hardy, I start to panic.
Okay. Actually, I missed them out, didn't I? That's very remiss of me. You know what? We first talked on the D Word back in October 2020 when it was a very young radio show. And so much has happened for, both of you and actually for the show as well since then. If I can start with you, Peter, and, start with the obvious question. It's great to speak to you. And how are you?
I think I'm okay. How can I put this from the eyebrows down? Everything works very well. It's just the eyebrows up, things are not going quite so good. But... I'm okay. I have lots of people support me. I manage to keep very active. I'm fairly confident that my memory is a lot worse or getting worse. But at the end of the day, I tend to focus on all the things I can do, and I'm not too worried about the things I can't do. So yeah, physically, I'm fit and healthy, and I'm living as well as I can.
You know, with that change in your memory, are you kind of aware that there is more support in areas that you now need that maybe you didn't before?
Yes, yeah, definitely. I'm definitely needing a lot more. Yeah, we're going to call it support because it is support. It's not support at a very high level. It's just people changing the way that they approach me in conversation and the way that they do things in their everyday lives just to fit and keep me in the loop. And they're quite simple little things for people to do, but... that support has become more over the last, I'm going to say, 18 months, Deb, am I right? As she is nodding for the radio. that support is getting more, but I still think that I'm living well, and I still think that I'm able to achieve all the things within reason that I aim for anyway.
Yeah, and that's that's really important and great. And when I first talked to you, you had the concept of your dementia monster, and that if you could end each day with Peter 1, dementia monster 0, then it'd been a good day. I mean, is that something you're still sticking to?
Yeah, absolutely. It's still something that I have in my head, and it's still something that I try and, because this condition is not anything that I can see or physically get a hold of, not like a broken leg or a broken finger or having a thorn in your finger, but making the monster and creating him is, it gives me, I suppose, a bit of an outlet. It gives me something physical to try and mend and to try and deal with. And yeah, I'm still battling against him. As he gets a little bigger and a little greener and a little more snottier and a little horribler, I have to, is horrible a word?
Yeah,
I think. I have to sort of become stronger and battle against him more, which I think can be tiring, but it also is a good thing because I'm a stubborn old devil and I don't like losing to my monster. So it keeps me on my toes.
And if I can turn to you, Deb, I mean, you know, the changes that Peter said about in his memory, etc. And also a really important thing I think you just said that, you know, it's not like a broken arm. You can't see it. But, you know, obviously you are in a position to perceive those changes.
Yes, and it would be wrong to say I haven't noticed there have been changes. But like Peter said, it's incumbent on me to adapt. So a couple of really simple things I do to support him. If he sends me a WhatsApp message, I put a very specific tone on my phone. It's a tone of a clown, actually. But when that clown tone goes off, I know answer him straight away, because if I don't, he'll forget what the question was, and that must be frustrating.
Could you not phone a more appropriate tone?
I thought that was entirely appropriate.
I mean, what's that all about?
It makes me laugh.
Does it indeed?
And I think Peter said as well about adapting, so he's kept in the conversation so he doesn't lose a thread. So I've learnt, I think, to do little summaries as we go along so he knows what we're talking about, just so he's not excluded. When he cycles in to see me, we've done a series of notes for his bike, which are laminated so he can put the appropriate note on his bike and hopefully take it off when he goes home, otherwise he'd be going around in a big circle. So little things to accommodate that memory change, and there has been a change. Peter often said I have to enter his world, he can't enter mine. So entering that world of change is what I have to do, and what I will do to maintain the friendship. Because however frustrating it might be for me to maybe to repeat things, it must be much more frustrating for Pete.
Dementia is a little bit of a revolving door that only revolves one way. We can't get out, so people have to revolve in. It's as simple as that, really.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Here on The D Word, as we approach the end of the year, we're busy planning for our programme for 2025. If you'd like to be part of it as one of my guests, then do drop me an email to tdwradio@gmail.com. My guests on this edition are Beda Berry and Deb Bunt.
I mean, Deb, is it in a sort of way, as your friendship becomes stronger, as you've, you know, required a little bit more support, required to become a little bit more perceptive, has it kind of altered your friendship?
Well, she's become more bad-tempered.
I think he's not talking to you.
I'm sorry.
I'm not sure that's entirely right. I agree the friendship has become stronger because of what our adventure has given to me, which made me really appreciate Peter being in my life. I think that's why it's stronger. And I've just adapted to the change in memory because Peter gives me so much more than me having to repeat myself. So, yeah, it's definitely a stronger friendship, but maybe not for the reason you said.
It's coming across loud and clear for, you know, I know you both, but people that may be hearing you for the first time, that a sense of humour plays a massive part in not only this friendship, but I guess, Peter, in your life as well. How important is, you know, maintaining that real sense of humour?
My father lived with Alzheimer's for 25 years. He had a great sense of humour, and I think I learned a lot of how to deal with my condition through, I suppose, being with him and understanding a little bit of how and what made him work. He had days where he was down and depressed about it, but mainly he was very upbeat about it. And I think that keeping that sense of humour is a very positive thing. It's all about accepting our condition. It's all about, can we constantly battle against it? Can we keep thinking about all the bad things that are going to happen? Or can we just move forward a bit and just be positive about things? Now, in my mind, I can't cure the problem that I've got, but can I make the dementia, I suppose, less aggressive if I have the right attitude to it? And the other thing is that if I'm relatively happy and smiley and laugh about things, then the people around me are happy and smiley and laugh about things. It seems to be rather infectious. And life is somewhat easier if everybody is happy. It just seems to work better. So that's why I'm like that. But I've always been a pretty much positive person. I've never really been the glass is half full. I've always been the glass is overflowing, because there's always something that could happen that could be worse. And it's just about living in the moment and not worrying about anything else, and just living well and being positive about it.
I agree with what Pete said. It's not to say you don't have moments when you're down, and I think that should be acknowledged, because we all do, Alzheimer's or not. But invariably, if he's having a bit of a down, he will end on a joke or a note to kind of balance it out. And I think acknowledging that you do sometimes get fed up with the whole thing is actually a good thing to acknowledge. But we keep going and we laugh and we joke, and that moment goes.
Yes, it does. Yeah. And because, I don't know, I suppose one thing about feeling down or depressed in some days, it's not good at the time. But then I always think to myself, well, if it's not a good day, then tomorrow will be a better day. So let's look forward to tomorrow. Let's go forward with tomorrow. And I think, I mean, here's the thing. When I was first diagnosed, I went through a period of depression, which I don't think is unusual, for about 12 months. I don't live with that depression now. I visit that depression. And what I've done is I've given myself the tools to live well, the good feeling bits, the bits of being able to get on my bike, and all the good things that come with life. And that gives me the tools to visit my depression for a short period of time and then leave it again. And that's the key thing.
Again, I guess, Deb, you know, it's interesting, that analogy, in terms of Peter having the tools to deal with the situation. Because it, in certain respects, with your relationship, I guess you're a bit of a mechanic as well. When he comes up with the tools, you're there as well, having to know which one to use and when.
And how to, pertinently in my case. But, yeah, I mean, only Peter knows what works. So as long as he shares that knowledge with me or hands me the appropriate tool, then it's up to me to use it. The fun comes when I'm using the wrong tool for the wrong issue.
Oh, yeah, I'm doomed.
But yeah, it's a huge learning process for me, and it may not work for everybody's Alzheimer's, but, you know, if Peter says this is what works for him, then it's up to me to make sure I do it.
Yeah, but everybody has a different toolbox, and it's not about what I do as an individual as such, and everybody has to do that. It's the concept of what I do. Then people can take the concept and they can do exactly that, use that exact concept to take it into their lives. So I do cycling a lot. That's, I suppose, the compass that gives me direction as a bicycle. Not everybody wants to cycle or can cycle. So people can walk, run, garden, swim, do all of those things. And they are the tools that will help them. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I think it's, you know, that's a really important concept. And what comes across is, you know, I don't know, if I start with you, Deb, I sometimes feel that people overcomplicate the world. And when we've been talking right at the beginning, it's Peter was saying it's those simple things that are so, so important, but often it's those simple things that get missed.
I think so. And I guess I'd never thought about it pre-Peter. I meant there was a pre-Peter in my life, hard to believe. But complicated just doesn't work. And it's a real learning curve for me because my brain has about 50 different things in going on at once to process and think about, and I find it really hard not to interject or interrupt. But keeping it simple is what works. And so I've tried to simplify my own life too. Not hugely successfully, but I've tried to take that learning from Peter. But certainly I apply that learning to Peter.
Yeah, and I think that we do overcomplicate things in our lives. And when complicated goes wrong, it's very difficult to fix. When simple goes wrong, it's a lot easier to fix. That's just the way I look at it. I always remember many years ago when my father was first diagnosed, the doctor said to him that he had Alzheimer's. You see, my father said, oh. And the doctor said, so do you understand what that is? Oh, yes, yes, Father said, I fully understand what you're saying, yeah. Oh, okay. And he said, you're okay with it? Oh, yeah, I'll be perfectly fine with it. He said, I haven't got to worry about it. And he said, all the people around me have. And all of a sudden, Father had uncomplicated it. And he looked at me and he said, oh, well, if we're finished here, he said, maybe we can stop and get fish and chips on the way back. I said, yes, if you like. And I said, you're not worried about it, Father? No, not in the slightest, he said. And I thought, well, what a funny thing. And I thought that was strange that he wasn't worried about it. But now I come to realise that he couldn't do anything about it. He couldn't fix it because it was too complicated to fix. So he thought he'd do the simple thing, just live that day, live the next day and the next day and see what happened. And that's what he did. Yeah.
I mean, Deb, when you're going around now, you meet a lot of people, you're doing radio, you've been on stage, haven't you, as well, which I'll ask you about in a minute. But what's people's reaction to, a lot of people may not have met someone with dementia or Alzheimer's or whatever. I mean, what's people's reaction to this whole really illuminating, as I'll call it, approach?
I think there's a couple of things. Often people say, well, you wouldn't have thought Peter had Alzheimer's, and that's quite a common thread. Oh, because you mean he's talking coherently and he hasn't got a big D or an A on his head. But I think what really comes across, more than the message that Peter gives, is a friendship. And it shows you can have a friendship with somebody with memory impairment, and hey, it works. And I think the feedback we often get is, wow, you two are really good friends. How amazing. And that is almost more important than the dementia. And yes, Peter to my right, we have been on the stage recently. Would you like me to remind you?
Oh, yes, please.
You see, effortless that was.
And we have to pay people to come.
You have to pay for the rotten tomatoes.
Oh, right.
So last week, we're working in conjunction with the Suffolk Safeguarding Partnership, and somebody there said, you know what, it's all very well you talking to 10, 15, 20 people. We should put you in a theatre. And you know what they delivered? And we went to a theatre in Bury St Edmunds, the Theatre Royal, and we stood on the stage, and behind us was the set to Allo Allo, because that's what they're putting on at the moment.
Oh, I just have to say good morning, everybody.
But you didn't. That was a trouble.
Oh, I did not.
You forgot the set was behind us. But we talked to a theatre full of people, well, a half full of people, and I know Peter, at the moment's gone for Peter, but I know in that moment, he really was bouncing. And for me, this is when I said, he gives me gifts. That's a huge gift he has given me, to be on the stage, not be nervous, and to have people listen to me. People have never listened to me in my life, and now they are.
Yeah, that's another thing that's happened, actually. Like, I'll have to. I know, Deb, you always wanted to be an author. I mean, did you ever imagine the book would be available in different languages and go how it's gone?
I didn't. And we've just signed a contract with a publishing company called Ulverscroft, who are the largest audio and large print publisher in the UK, for them to do it as an audio book. So for people who perhaps for whom reading is more challenging, they can now listen, they will be able to listen to the book. I didn't think that would happen. I didn't think we'd be invited to all the places we've been invited to plug for a couple of weeks. We're going to Gibraltar, to the Gibraltar Literary Festival, to talk about the book and living well with Alzheimer's. And I never thought anyone would basically pick us up, take us over to Gibraltar, put us up and let us talk. I mean, that so that's like the pinnacle of the journey. But I think every time I think we've reached the top, there's going to be something else happening, I think. So, yeah, that's another thing. Another one of my ambitions that Peter Berry has fulfilled. We won't talk about the other ambition, which I know you, Pete Hill, know only too well what that is. And that's not going to happen in terms of Champions League victories. But no, I never thought the book would do what it's done. And it's just incredible for me.
When I was first diagnosed and after the year of depression, I just had this idea that maybe if I could go out and change somebody's life and just maybe get people to think a little bit about what they're doing and what dementia is and just help a few people to live a little better, I thought, well, that'll be job done. And I never, ever dreamed that any of this would happen and we would be where we are now, even though I have very little idea of what has happened. But I know that over the years, I think that we have done a lot in educating people. And, well, to me, you know, we talk about dementia taking from us. I like to think that maybe I've taken a little bit from it, maybe. And maybe as a result of doing what we're doing, people are living better with this condition and people are understanding more. And we're sort of planting this little seed that hopefully will grow and people will be more educated from the experience. And the other thing I'll just add is that a few years ago, my journey was different to where it is now. So the part of dementia that we were talking about then is very different to now. And that, I think, is also an extremely important thing because as my condition changes, we need to show people that it does change. So as people progress in their condition, we don't support them the same way as we did a few years ago. We support them differently. So hopefully my journey is still a book that's being rewritten and still educational for people, regardless to how my memory gets and what support I need. It's still helping people understand. So this journey is still going on. And I just thought that it would only last a year or so. We would talk about what we're doing and then people wouldn't be interested. But that's not the case.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Before we go back to Peter and Deb, just want to mention one of the other guests we've had here on the podcast. Congratulations to Manny Singh Kang, who was voted Fundraiser of the Year at the recent Pride of Britain Awards and had just completed his 22nd Samosa Saturday outside the Wolves Molineux Stadium, raising money for Dementia UK. Great stuff, Manny. Now back to Peter and Deb.
I think that's a really important aspect, isn't it, Deb, that following the journey from both sides, from Peter's side and also from the friendship point of view and from your side. And it's, you know, it's as Peter said, it's an evolving story.
It really is. And at the risk of not only talking about Peter, but talking about me, the person I was half a dozen years, 6 years ago, is a very different person to the person I am now. And that is part of the journey that we've both been on. So it's not a one-sided thing. And I am a different person. I'm more confident. I have a belief that actually, I have something to offer, which all through my working life, I never did. So as Peter's journey changes, mine changes too.
You know, you can have two ways of looking at this, people supporting people with dementia and people with dementia supporting them, other the people beside us. And something has just sprung to mind is that, you know, if you've got a sports car, it's a very complicated sports car. Let's say that's the person who's supporting somebody with dementia. That sports car won't go unless it's got tyres with air in it. The air is the simpler version of somebody who has got dementia. So without the air, the sports car won't go. And also the other way around. So the complicated supports the simple, the simpler life supports the complicated life. And that's what it's all about. So my life is very simple. It's very here and now. And that supports Debs. Her life is complicated and full on. And that supports me. So that's the two things. So I'm the air. She's the racing car.
Oh, can I be the air?
No, you can't be because the air is simple.
Okay, yeah. I'm with it now.
We rehearsed this yesterday.
Oh dear, yeah, absolutely, with both of you. I mean, you know, you've talked to so many people. I mean, Beta, how do you feel that in talking to younger audiences as well, this is a, you know, a really important subject? When we talk about dementia, people wrongly think that it is a condition of age. They think that people of a certain age will talk about it, and younger audiences not really going to be interested. The World Alzheimer's report last year was all about prevention. It had 14 lifestyle factors that you can change when you're in your 30s, 40s, even 20s, which can give you a better outcome and a better opportunity of not having dementia. So, you know, how important is it getting this really great message across the younger audiences?
Oh, so very, very important, because the future of dementia is not with me. The future of dementia is with the younger people who we're trying to educate. They're the future of how dementia will evolve, how it will not evolve, and what will happen. And in actual fact, I think that younger people are more clued in on change than somebody who is older. I think as we go on in life, we get set in a pattern, we get set in our ways, and it's very difficult to change people. Younger people are used to being more adapted, and I think that they can change more. And I think that talking to younger people about dementia is extremely important. I mean, one classic example is children and dementia. Younger children, they don't understand dementia, the complicated mess. All they understand is the simple part of, is grandpa fun or is he not fun? And if grandpa is fun, then they treat grandpa just the same as they do mum, dad, auntie, uncle, anybody who's fun. And they have this blinkered approach to everything. And as a result, the person who has dementia treats them differently as well, because they're treating them normal. And we have so much to learn from younger people, as well as teenagers and further up, because their approach to the condition is extremely different to somebody who's in their 30s and 40s and 50s.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, that's the case with young children. I know you've got a young grandson, Deb, and seen lots of, you know, lovely pictures of him with Peter. And it's this real childhood, non-judgmental thing, isn't it?
It totally is. I mean, Dean's go-to expression, if something is broken, he'll say, well, Peter will fix it. And when they get together, they're just stupid together, and it's perfect. And they get on, and they talk... I won't say nonsense, because clearly it's not nonsense, but they talk a talk that they both laugh, and it's a really lovely connection.
Children are very good at entering the world of somebody with dementia, because I wouldn't say it's their world, but they're on that level of seems to me as though people with dementia are on an FM wave and children on an FM wave, whereas adults seem to be on an AM wave, and the whole thing is not cluing in. And we tend to lose that when we get a little older. We do a thing called we grow up, and we our mindset changes of how we should talk to somebody. And if someone's got dementia, we have this idea that they can't hear us. So we talk to them very loudly and clearly. Are you all right today, dear? Whereas Dean, you'll say, come on, Peter, get your bike, let's go. Because he doesn't need to understand any of that. It's just, Peter is going to cycle with me. That's fun. Let's do it. It's all about the here and now for him as well. Yeah,
I think that is a great message. Sadly, time's bringing us to a close. But I just wanted to ask you, Peter, you know, if someone recently diagnosed is listening to this now, what would you say to them?
Well, there's a couple of pieces of advice, something that I learnt the hard way. When you're first diagnosed, don't keep it to yourself. Tell friends, tell immediate family, because they will understand what's going on more if you explain it. And the other thing is, it takes a few minutes really to get a diagnosis for a doctor to sit down and tell you what's happened. You haven't changed in them few minutes. You're the same person as you were before that doctor spoke. You are no different. The only thing is that somebody professional has told you something. You will walk out of that surgery the same person as you walked in. You are no different. Take that, use that. Don't walk out there a shrinking wreck. Walk out 7 foot tall and use that strength that you've got and think, you know what, I could be okay here for the next 5, 10, 15 years. Let's take that and tell friends, tell family what's going on. And as you change, they'll be able to change with you. Give people as much information as you want to give them, because the more information they have, the more they can help you. Knowledge for them is great power for you, put it that way.
And I think continue to see the person as the person. Don't let him be defined by the condition.
No.
Learn to live in the moment, mm-hmm. which is quite hard for most of us, and enjoy the journey, because nobody knows what the future holds for any of us, as we all know.
Yeah.
But I do think not defining somebody by a diagnosis, but being by who they are, mm-hmm. is really, really key.
Well, Peter and Deb, it's been an absolute pleasure. And thank you so much for sharing D Word 250 with me.
Wow, 250th. Wow, good. Really cool. Yeah. Well, thank you very much for having us on. It's a great privilege and pleasure to be the 250 on your show. How cool was that?
Almost lying.
Yeah, all the yeah. I should write a poetry book.
Nah.
that'll be next. Thanks to both of you, and come 300, we'll get back together again.
Absolutely, yes, definitely.
Thanks so much to Peter and Deb, not only for being my guests here, but also my friends, and also for being a real inspiration in terms of friendship and lifting the stigma around dementia. And long may Peter continue to get one over on his dementia monster. If you haven't had a chance to read their book Slow Bunger yet, you can find it at all major booksellers, and as Deb mentioned, it will also shortly be available as an audiobook. Well, that's all for this edition of the podcast. Hope you've enjoyed it, and you'll join me again soon for some more dementia talk right here on the D Word.